earlier, but not too bad going from Sabina. When I was working on the lesson for today, I was going through my notes and I had put down probably about 12 or 13 terms of things that I saw in people around me, I saw in myself, I saw in the world, and just tendencies and traits and things that we all struggle with. And I was trying to find a good way to get into looking at a way to present all those things. But every time I kept going through my material, I kept coming back to the same places. I kept coming back to the book of Exodus over and over again. I wrote down one thing and I was looking for it and Exodus showed up. And then I had searched for another term and then Exodus showed up. And I kept going over and over again. And one of the things that I want to do, and I'm probably going to do this for next week, those of you might remember I did kind of an autobiographical study from the perspective of Peter, the Lord's disciple and apostle, and kind of looking at his life. And I was starting to do one on Joshua because Joshua's life is much bigger than sometimes we give him credit for, and sometimes more than we really look at. But as I was looking and I was really making a decision to go in that direction, I kept coming across this other individual. I'm like, I don't know if I've ever heard a lesson on that. And we've all talked about this person, as we'll get to in just a moment. But I like going back and looking in these passages when there's something noteworthy about an individual that's either by themselves has represented God's plan in their lives, or them part of their lives being part of God's plan for someone else. We often diminish their role, and sometimes we need to look back at that. So I'm going to try to keep my conversations down. I've got a lot of text, as I've been doing in my last few lessons lately. But I've got some important things I want you to kind of think about. Pay attention to the underlined words as we go along. So starting off, we're talking about a gentleman named Jethro. As I've got on the board behind me, it says, as we read the Bible, there are often names of people who have impacted the lives of important men and women in Scripture. And these might be people, they could be anybody. There's so many stories, even with Jesus and the teaching that he was doing, that there's one or two people that just keep popping up almost every chapter. But as I've got on there, it says, but they are often overshadowed by the main characters. And that's exactly what I think has happened with this person we're going to be talking about today. Today we're going to look at one of these types of people, and we're going to be talking about Jethro, as I have up there, and some questions I'm going to present for you, and we're going to follow this up at the end of the lesson. Who was he? Who was Jethro? Where did he live? Whose life did he touch? How were they connected? And what is the biggest or his biggest contribution in the story in Scripture as we read about him? So first of all, I want to remind everybody who we're talking about. I'm going to add a little bit of fun here in the beginning, but again, this is not just to be a detraction from the lesson, as I typically throw pictures and things to think about, metaphors and so on in my lessons. I think going back and thinking about things that are memorable, whether you like the people or not, will often help you recall stories. So we're talking about Jethro, and if I say that name, is that the first person that many of you think of? You say, oh, that's that guy, that's who Roger's talking about. Well, if you look in the text of the Bible, you will not find this person. So who is this guy? Well, if you look up, and I'm pulling some of this from Wikipedia, use caution as always with Wikipedia, but most of this information seems to be substantiated. That gentleman's real name there is Max Baer Jr., or as it says below there, Maximilian Adelbert Baer Jr., big name. I'm not sure how many people remember that or ever knew his full name. He was born December 4th, 1937, an American actor. He was a producer, a comedian, and director. So how does that have to do with Jethro? Well, he says he's best known for playing Jethro Bodine in The Dim-Witted Nephew of Jed Clampett on the Beverly Hillbillies. And I think most of us, some of you may have seen that show when it was primetime. I wasn't fortunate enough to catch the Beverly Hillbillies primetime, but I certainly saw it many times in syndication. But I knew exactly who this person was. So when I started trying to think of, well, who's a Jethro to me? Well, that was one of the first ones. A little bit more about him. And again, I'm spending a little bit of time on some of these people that aren't who we're talking about today, just to make a point later. It says Bear's first acting role was in Goldilocks and the Three Bears at Blackpool Pavilion in England in 1949. I thought that was interesting. You see him in his acting role and you just don't really think, I can't believe he would get outside the United States. It continues on and says he began acting professionally in 1960 at Warner Brothers, where he made his appearance on television such as the shows as Maverick, Surfside 6, Hawaiian Eye, Cheyenne, The Roaring Twenties, and 77 Sunset Strip. Normally when I say those names, I could look around and see people nod, and it's like, oh yeah, I remember that show too. But it says his career took off 2 years later when he joined the cast of the Beverly Hillbillies. In Beverly Hillbillies in 1962, Bear was cast in the role of the naive but well-meaning Jethro Bodine, Jed Clampett's nephew. Some of you may remember that. If you don't, if you're a younger person and you have no idea what we're talking about, that's why they invented YouTube, so you can find out all about it. The article goes on and says he continued to take on other parts during the 9-year run of the Beverly Hillbillies, which I had actually forgotten how long that show was in syndication or on the air, and then that's why we see it so much in syndication. So that he also appeared on television programs such as The Vacation Playhouse, Love American Style, as well as a Western, Time for Killing. So all these things this gentleman did. But the question I have before you today, is he the right Jethro for today's study? And I would say, or hopefully you would say, the answer is, nope, it's not him. That's not who we're talking about. So let's move things forward a little bit closer to today. Who is Jethro we might be talking about? Is that who we're talking about? Well, some of you might recognize that person from another very popular TV series. The character's name, not the person's name, is Leroy Jethro Gibbs. And another article says, Leroy Jethro Gibbs is a fictional character of the CBS TV series NCIS, which some of you may have seen, portrayed by Mark Harmon. So just like the gentleman before was playing Jethro, this gentleman was also playing a Jethro. He's a former U.S., and I'd gone into some depth on the background of who the guy that played Jethro Clampett was in the previous article. This one just talks about this series and what his role was in there. But it says he's a former U.S. Marine Corps scout sniper who turned special agent who commands a team of Naval Criminal Investigative Services. It says Gibbs is the most accomplished marksman of the team and the most skilled at handling violent standoffs. He depends on his other agents heavily for his technical forensics and background checks. And it says he is patient but firm with his team, has little patience for bureaucracy. He commands the most of the other main characters. And you can see all those names up there. I think the show typically refers to these people in their last names, McGee and Bishop and Torres and so on. But all those people, if you've ever seen that show, you probably recognize the names of them and how their relationships are. So if we look at that person there and another Jethro, again, talking about his character here, it says Leroy Jethro Gibbs was born in 1954. This is not about Mark Harmon, but this is about his character, as confirmed in the episode Date with Destiny, in which he visits Shannon's grave and the date is shown on the headstone. So again, just things about the show that maybe you care about or don't care about. And when my remote works. So, is this the right Jethro we're talking about today in today's study? We talked about Jethro Bodine. He wasn't right. What about this guy? Nope, another X for this. Okay, well, another Jethro that I've thought about, and going backwards again, not forward like we were talking about, another Jethro that I grew up with and heard about often was Jethro Tull. Another article also from Wikipedia, and I know this from most of my own growing up. Jethro Tull is a British rock band formed in Blackpool, Lancashire. So they were formed overseas in 1967. Initially playing blues rock, jazz fusion, the band leader later developed their sound to incorporate elements of hard rock and folk to forge a progressive rock signature. And those of you that might like classic rock, or as we term it today, and those kind of things, would certainly recognize this. This is not a picture of the band when they were first playing back in 67. I think this was a reunion tour picture from a 50-year reunion tour back in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken. But some interesting things about this, as you may not know, it says the band was led by vocalist, flutist, and guitarist Ian Anderson. That's the gentleman in the front there with the flute. But the thing that I didn't know about him, just pay attention to this. He has featured the revolving door of lineups through the years. If you like rock music at all, just look at some of these names. Longtime guitarist Martin Barr, keyboardist John Evans, Dee Palmer, Peter John Vitesse, drummers Clive Bunker, Barry Barlow, Don Perry, and bassist Glenn Cornick, Jeffrey Hammond, John Glasscock, and David Pegg. So all these people have been stars, if you will, as supporting band members of this band, Jethro Tull. this is where it gets interesting for me. Anderson possessed a large overcoat. Says his father, having given it to him back when they were starting the band out, said, "You better take this, it's going to be a cold winter." So it basically was his dad giving him a warm coat just to keep him warm. The story goes on and says, this overcoat and slightly later the flute became part of his early stage image. So as you see him up there performing on the flute. It was around this time that Anderson purchased a flute after becoming frustrated with his inability to play guitar, as well as Abrams or Cream's guitarist, Eric Clapton. So he's comparing himself to other popular guitarists around that time. And he's saying, I was a lead guitarist, I was the lead man in a band, and I wasn't a very good guitarist compared to these other people. And it says, because of their managers said he should also remain a rhythm guitarist, which often, if you like music, they become the person that plays the melody in a song, but they're not the person that stands out in front of the band, with Abrams becoming the frontman, and he didn't really care for that. So he says, Ian Anderson says, I didn't want to be just another third-rate guitar player who sounded like a bunch of other third-rate guitar players. I wanted to do something that was a bit more idiosyncratic, hence the switch to another instrument. When Jethro Tull began, I'd been playing the flute for about 2 weeks. It was a quick learning curve. Literally every night I walked on stage was a flute lesson. And I really thought that was interesting because when I think of Jethro Tull, those of you that might like the band, you think of Ian Anderson just being a flutist, a flute player. And that's not what he was doing. He was trying to make a difference. Wrapping this up, so are they the right Jethro for today's study? You might think, well, he's the front man, so he must be Jethro Tull. That's not true. That's the name of the band, but the whole band is Jethro Tull. Are they who are we talking about today? And the answer is no again. So we're not talking about Jethro from the Beverly Hillbillies. We're not talking about Jethro from NCIS. And we're not talking about a rock band. Who are we talking about? Jethro, also called Reuel, and this is taken from Britannica.com, also called Reuel or Hobab in the Old Testament, priest of Midian, the Kenite clan, of whom Moses took refuge after he killed an Egyptian and whose daughter Moses married. Now, this is kind of a summary outside of Scripture. I'm showing you a picture there of this journey that Moses goes on in just a moment, but I want you to kind of pay attention to that travel map there. So who is this Jethro we're talking about? And the question I ask once again, we've asked three times, is it the right Jethro? And it's been wrong three times. What about this person? If we're looking at Scripture, is this who we're talking about? And the answer is yes, the check mark on there. So, how do we begin this story? How can we find out who this Jethro is? Starting in Exodus chapter 2, verse 11, it says, Now it came to pass in those days, and you're certainly welcome to keep your Bibles open to this if you'd like. Came to pass in those days when Moses was grown. Remember, Moses started off, he was raised by Pharaoh's daughter. His mother was the maidservant. We had some really good lessons presented by some of the other men in this congregation in the past. That he went out to his brethren, and remember, he was also a Jew. He was of the Israelite tribe, and even though he was raised as an Egyptian, he was native kin to the people that were basically in bondage. Said he went out to his brethren and looked at their burden, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. In verse 15, it says, When Pharaoh heard, well, I kind of skipped this for now, but we'll get back to it in just a moment. It says, when Pharaoh heard of this matter, talking about what Moses ended up doing in this case, he sought to kill Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. So this is how I'm leading into the story about our Jethro. And that map that I showed you a moment ago, going from Goshen in Egypt, where the Israelites were encamped as slaves, to the point where at least they think that he arrived by land, is about 260 miles. So he didn't just walk away on a short journey. He took a pretty long hike. So tell me a little bit about Midian, you might say. This is taken also from the BibleJourney.org. It says, The people of Midian were distant relatives of the Israelites, which may explain why Moses, born of a Hebrew parents, fled from the well-watered land of the Nile Delta to the semi-arid coastal lowlands of Midian and remained there for many years. The Midianites were descended from Midian, the fourth son of Abraham and his second wife Keturah, born around 1819 B.C. Again, some speculative article there by some secular material there, but do dig into that a little bit. You can also follow that story up in Genesis chapter 25. So a little bit about more about Midian. It says, during Abraham's lifetime, Midian and his five brothers were sent to the east, from Genesis 25:6, and they settled in the territory to the east and south of the Dead Sea. And you would have saw that on that map we just looked at. The article continues, it was Midian traders who took Joseph to Egypt as a slave in 1679 B.C., that's 1,679 years before Christ approximately, and sold him to Potiphar, the captain of Pharaoh's guard. And that references Genesis 37:36. Again, this is also from that same article that I was citing. So we get into text here. What does Genesis chapter 37:28 tell us about the Midianites? It says, then the Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. So when we see Midian in Scripture, this is one of those instances. And it was also referenced in the article that I just read. Genesis 37:36 continues, now when the Midianites had sold him to Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and the captain of the guard. And notice all these things interlinked there. The Midianites, Egypt, Pharaoh, there's all this interactivity even before this story that we're looking at today. So back to our story again. Exodus chapter 2, starting with verse 16. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and they drew water, and they filled the troughs with to water their father's flock. Then the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. So where we cut off earlier, remember Moses had, we didn't really get into it. I thought sure I had it in here deeper, but I will have to double check. But remember when Moses saw what was being done to his brethren, they were being mistreated by the Egyptians and being beaten. He ended up killing the Egyptian for the sake of his brethren. And then when his brethren saw it, they were afraid of him. Moses was afraid of him being found out by Pharaoh, and so he fled. And so he runs until he gets to Midian, and this is where he finally gets to where this watering well is. But in this case here, we see that these seven daughters of this man, Jethro, as we're going to find out, or by other names as it's mentioned in the text of the Bible, these women are being harassed at the well when they're trying to take care of their father's flock. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. Verse 18, when they came to Reuel, their father, his name is Reuel here, he said, how is it that you have come so soon today? The fact that he said that alone means they must run into this problem frequently. Not only trying to deal with the flock, but also with these gentlemen causing difficulty for them. Whatever they were causing problems for, they had to deal with it. And he said, how come you got back so soon? And they said, an Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds, and he also drew enough water for us and watered the flock. So Moses stood up, was helping them out, and was also taking care of their needs. Exodus 2:20-22, he said to his daughters, and where is he? And why is it that you have left the man? Call him that he may eat bread. Very interesting how this whole story is kind of unfolding. It was reminding me again when they were trying to find a bride for Isaac in a very similar situation. Women at the well being fed or watering the flocks and so on. You see that in many places, even when we get into some of the lessons recently about the women at the well. So the father's asking the daughters, how's come this guy's not here? If he helped you out, why didn't you bring him here to have some food? Continues on in verse 21. And Moses was content, he's kind of skipping through things here a little bit. Then Moses was content to live with a man, talking about who would become his father-in-law. And he gave Zipporah, his daughter, to Moses. And she bare him a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, I have been a stranger in a foreign land. Now some of the things we're getting into here that I wanted to bring out there, we think of Moses a lot, but we don't think about Moses being married. There's a few times we skip across, and we're going to get to that in just a moment, when we get into another later verse of Exodus, about the fact that Moses did have a father-in-law, but we just skip past that to what he was focusing on. And we kind of miss this whole story, and that's why I wanted to bring it back to our attention. So he did have a son, he did have a wife, and this gentleman became his father-in-law. Continues on, verse 23. Now it happened in the process of time that the king of Egypt died. Then the children of Israel groaned because of their bondage. And they cried out, and their cry came up to God because of their bondage. So God heard their groanings, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God acknowledged them. So many things, even in this little section here. the fact that God is always being devoted to what he promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, even beyond what the children of Israel's actions warranted. We've talked about that in some recent lessons too. But I also had down in here this idea about the people were groaning. Not only did they have it hard before, it was even harder now. And we see that the people that knew Moses previously are gone. And we see, if you read further down into this, you'll see that God says, there's nobody there that knows you. Just go back here and take care of some things. I'm not going to focus on what God told Moses, but I want to go back to look at this. So now we're in Exodus chapter 3, starting with verse 1. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law. This is typically what the only place is that you might read about Jethro, because we read about this and we jump right into what Moses was trying to do for God. He was the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of a bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Then Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn. So I don't focus on this. We've talked about this story many times, but just seeing how Moses ran into this situation because he was keeping the flock of the man that became his father-in-law almost by chance. And I think as you see this story unfold, you'll see God's hand very much in it. So now we jump down to chapter 4 in Exodus, verse 18. So Moses went and returned to Jethro. This is after all the things happened, all the plagues happened. God told Moses what he needed to do and take his brother with him. They went to Pharaoh. They warned him to leave. They asked him to stay, or said that they won't let him go. And we see the plagues all go through. After that, Exodus 4:18. So Moses went and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead. His father-in-law said to him, please let me go and return to my brethren who are in Egypt and see whether they are still alive. So Jethro said, go in peace. So everything I just said was too early. So he asked that first, goes back to his father-in-law. Even after God tells him to go there, he goes back and he shows his respect to his father-in-law, asking if he can go there. Now, jumping down to Exodus 18:1, starting with verse 1. And Jethro, the priest of Midian, again, after everything that's happened, Moses' father-in-law heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel his people, that the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back with her two sons, of whom the name was Gershom, for he said, I have been a stranger in a foreign land. And the name of the other was Eleazar, for he said, the God of my father was my help, and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. Continuing on, and Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness. So remember, they're already starting their wandering early on here, and already Jethro is able to catch up to him, where he was encamped at the mountain of God. I've got that underlined there because remember, when he saw the burning bush, Moses had said it had taken Jethro's flock back to the very back of the desert to the mountain of God, and we're back to where we started. And now he said to Moses, I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons with her. So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law. He bowed down and kissed him, and they asked each other about their well-being. And they went into the tent, and Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the hardship that had come upon them on the way, and how the Lord had delivered them. Then Jethro rejoiced for all the good which the Lord had done for Israel, whom he had delivered out of the hand of the Egyptians. It's interesting here, Jethro comes because he's excited. He's heard by word of mouth what has happened, but now Moses tells him directly every detail about what happened. And he also talks about the hardship that he had to go through and the hardship that the Egyptians had to go through with what they suffered. Continuing on, and Jethro said, blessed be the Lord who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of Pharaoh, and who has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. I was going to get in a little bit more study on just exactly who Jethro was, this priest of Midian. You certainly see that he's connected to Abraham, but some of the things that he says, you see some very secular views. I don't want to get into that because I don't have the answers at this time, but just look at the way that he reads this up, because it's very similar to some of the ways that we see others talking to the prophets of God when they show that God is alive and God is working for them. He says, I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. For in the very thing which they have behaved proudly, talking about the Egyptians, he was above them. And he recognized that. Everybody knows even today, when you look back at the Egyptians and the dominion and power that they had over the world at that time, they were very strong. But here Jethro says, God was better than them. And it says, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and offered sacrifice to offer to God. Again, I don't know what his background is, but here he knew that this needed to be done. And Aaron came with the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. So not only is Moses in the company of his father-in-law, but Aaron, and it says all the elders of Israel came here to have bread with him too. So again, something to look into for your own study. Continuing on, Exodus 18, starting with verse 13. And so it was on the next day that Moses sat to judge the people. And the people stood before Moses from morning till evening. So when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did for the people, and he said, what is this thing that you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit, all the people standing before you from morning till evening? So he's there, Moses is doing things that he's expected to do by God, and he's looking at how he's doing it, and he's like, why are you doing it like this? Continues on, and Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a difficulty, they come to me, and I judge between one and another. And I make known the statutes of God and his laws. Certainly what he was told to do and what he's doing well. Verse 17, so Moses' father-in-law said to him, the thing that you are doing is not good. He wasn't saying that judging between the right and wrongs of the people wasn't good, or that doing what God asked him to do wasn't good. But he says, both you and these people are with you will surely wear yourselves out, for the things is too much for you. You are not able to perform it by yourself. Listen now to my voice. I will give you counsel, and God will be with you. Stand before God for the people, so that you may bring the difficulties to God. And you shall teach them the statutes and the laws and show them the way in which they must walk and the work they must do. Moreover, you shall select from all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness. So people that weren't going to be trying to get something for themselves out of all of it. And place such over to them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of ten. Again, just look at the wisdom of this father-in-law of Moses. And let them judge the people at all times. And then it will be that every great matter they shall bring to you, but every small matter they themselves shall judge. So it will be easier for you, for they will bear the burden with you. If you do this thing, and this is my favorite part, he's got all this good advice, but then he stops to make sure he says this, and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure. And all this people will also go to their place in peace. Verse 24, so Moses heeded the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties and tens. So they judged the people at all times. The hard cases they brought to Moses, but they judged every small case themselves. Then Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went his way to his own land. It's a very short time that we see Jethro, but his impact on Moses' life, the life of the people of Israel, and certainly the people that had things that they needed judgment for, was very significant. I asked this question in the beginning. Who was Jethro? Well, he was the priest of Midian. Later, he was Moses' father-in-law, and even tutor in some ways, as we just saw. Where did Jethro live? He lived in the land of Midian, not Egypt and not Israel. Interesting there, because where he was escaping to. We talk often about these Bible maps and stuff. I will encourage you to do a little bit of research. Midian is an interesting thing to try to find. Sometimes it's clearly all the mountainous region that you see there, where the two fingers of the two gulfs there, the Gulf of Suez and the Gulf of Aqaba. Basically, everything that's to the east of the Gulf of Aqaba is what they say Midian is, but it shows up in different maps. Continuing on, whose life did Jethro touch? Well, in this story, he certainly touched Moses' life. He certainly touched Israel's life, and he certainly touches our life today by his example. And how are they connected? Talking about Moses. And when Moses was fleeing Egypt, he came to Jethro and Jethro's family, and they certainly became very close with that. And what was his biggest contribution? His recommendation for Moses to get help, and for Moses and for all. So I was going to put up a thing for all of us to take away from that, but I think I'm going to let you all do that on your own. I think the story of Jethro is like a lot of other stories that we've got into in the past. Characters that are like B characters or C characters and really important to studies. And when they are doing the will of God, or they're, you can see that they're part of a pattern or part of a plan, the strength and wisdom that they share is often profound. And so I just encourage all of us to, for one, get back to the Bible and spend more time in study, looking at some of these deeper places that we sometimes skip over. But two, that we can be more like that, that we can be a person that's a helper to those around us, and just trying to be beneficial for the cause of Christ. And as we do at all times, whenever there's an invitation, we open this time up for those that may be struggling, those that may have sin in their lives, or those that have not become Christians that want to be part of the saved. And certainly Israel was saved because of God with them, and the Passover Lamb. Today, that same salvation is open to all of us through obedience, through confession and baptism into Christ. At this time, please take your songbooks out and turn to the song that's been selected. If you have any needs, please come.